CJSF is 90.1 FM, broadcasting from the heights of Burnaby Mountain.
Sunny La.
Kwe.
Wai Beat Nak Seal.
Tan She.
Tanet E. Negar Dakote.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Wai Kastkalhalt, Isquist Sumachat Kintilson Pinkton. My name is Tracy Kimbono. I am a storyteller, filmmaker, and grandmother. I was thrilled to catch up with my longtime friend Peggy recently and hear all about her journey as a new grandmother and her passion for embracing our Ensilkchen language. I have many childhood memories of Peggy Jo, who lives on the Okanagan Indian Band Reserve near Vernon, British Columbia. Now that we are both grandmothers, we are eager to become more fluent in our language.
Hawaii Haskalhalt, Disquis Kwai Honam Konam, Sami Squeez Peggy Joe. Hello, my name is Peggy Joe, and I am from the Okanagan Nation and a community member for the Okanagan Indian Band at my grandmother's house. So my Kakna, my dad's mom, she spoke fluent Okanagan. And she would talk to my aunt, her sister, my Auntie Jean. And it was always when they didn't want us to know what they were talking about. And so I heard it from my grandma. But other than that, I don't recall hearing language at all. Yeah, I grew up mainly hearing English. The only Inkailchen I ever heard was from my grandmother, and that was not like on a daily basis.
Do you know why that, you know, by the 1970s in your community, English became like the primary language that was spoken, as opposed to even, you know, 50 years prior to that, where everybody was speaking in Inkailchen?
Today I have a better understanding of it. Before I started my language journey, what I understood for our family is that my grandma wanted her kids to be able to fit in and have a good life. And so for her, it was really important that her kids spoke English. My dad attended the day school. So there was two on the Okanagan Indian Band. And so he attended the day school. So being Scaelic was not a part of their curriculum. It was really a non-Indigenous approach to learning.
When do you think that things started to turn around in your community? When did you start seeing, you know, the community as a whole becoming more interested in learning the Ensilkchen language?
I couldn't give you an exact date, but just for my own experience, about 5 years ago, there was an opportunity to participate in a language class. And through collaboration with the Inalkin Center, we were able to start a cohort for language learning within our community. At that time, I was doing a maternity fill for the Okanagan Indian Band in education, and so we were able to collaborate and get that class set up and moving.
That sounds really exciting. So that was like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And what was it like going as a fresh new language learner, and what did it look like?
So when we first started, we had 19 people register, and it was people from different parts of our community. We overcame some barriers in terms of the family divides or historical family, whatever. It was language brought us all together, and I really enjoyed it. And when I started, I made a promise to myself that I was not going to allow anyone to stop me from learning the language. And I really held on to that in moments of feeling really inadequate or really unsure. Learning language is not easy, and it really takes a mental toughness as well as emotional, if that's the right word. And so a typical class for us was with our fluent speaker, Pauline Gregoire. There was lots of laughs, and I still remember the first few classes where we're trying to say some words, and everyone, there was so much laughter because we would be like, how do we make our mouth do that? Or how do we make our tongues do that? And I just, at that time, I thought, how am I ever going to do this? And so really what I took away from that was that that sense of camaraderie, I guess, with my peers, in that a lot of us were starting at the same place, and there was no fear, there was no shame, there wasn't anything negative about the learning space, because we were all kind of starting at the same spot. So it was something that I will hold close to my heart, because Pauline really approached it from teaching by example. And so what I mean by that is she would give us a word, and so picture 19 adults in a U-shape, and Pauline at that time was 82, I think, and she would come and stand in front of you, and she would say the word, and then you would have to repeat it. And if you didn't get the sound right, she would just say it again. And then so you just had to repeat it. And if it still wasn't right, like, she never at one point said, no, that's not right. She just would say the word again, and you would say it again. And then when you finally got it, she would be like, chast. And then she would move on to the next person. So the Okanagan Indian Band created an immersion school in 2006. And so my son was 6 years old, so going into grade one. And we made a decision to put him into the immersion school with the knowledge or the insight that because it's a brand new school, he may need extra supports in academics. But he would never get extra supports or access to language. And so that was a decision we made, was we are going to put him in the immersion school because we want him to learn the language. And Pauline was one of the instructors at that time. And she was not strict, but what she said was that learning your language is not a game, and your language isn't something that's, you know, like fun or a game. There was a level of respect, maybe is the word, that she demanded from the kids around language. Like, language is as important as math, science, socials, or whatever, the academia part. She held language to that same standard.
Mm.
And I think that that really stuck with me, is that our language is today I would tell you my language is more important than those academics. But it really elevated in my eyes, like, the importance of language.
And so it sounds like your son went to this immersion school, and so if he's learning language And he goes home, and his parents don't have the tools to be able to speak the language with him. This is an obvious solution for adult learners to be learning, because there was a lot of initiatives for language nests and with the young. But when they go home, they have nobody to speak with. They have nobody to practice with.
I think that is it. One of the biggest challenges is access to the language. And, I mean, even that long ago, there wasn't this availability that we have today to obtain language. Yeah, so our kids were starting to get involved in the Language Nest program. The daycare had our fluent speakers going into the daycare. And so there was an acknowledgement of the importance of language, and there were initiatives that were put into place. And I think those planted the seed for where we are today.
We're going to hear more from Peggy Jo, but now I want to play you a song from award-winning Sealk songbird Kelly Derrickson. Kelly is a dear friend of mine and also a member of the West Bank First Nation. This is Kelly Derrickson and Pine Needles and Rust.
Mountainside, longest drive of my whole life. Couldn't wait to get outside and breathe in the air. I'd see you smiling as you waved. You'd holler out, "Hey, baby cakes." Man, I used to hate that name, but now I don't. You were my hero. I was your shadow. I'd fall. Your chair and my rag doll, and the puzzle that we couldn't solve, 'cause we lost peace. Try to light the fireplace, but it don't wanna burn the same. The old piano just won't play the way it did for you.
Album I Am, that was Kelly Derrickson with Pine Needles and Rust. My name is Tracy Kim Bono, and I'm your host for the Sealk episodes of Words and Culture. I am speaking with language learner and keeper Peggy Jo. Peggy is from the same community as my late father, the Okanagan Indian Band. I attended a couple of Peggy's language classes, and I asked Peggy to share some of the innovative exercises they do around language learning.
In our MAP program that I'm a part of right now, the Master Apprentice program, One of the activities that we decided as a group that we wanted to do was we wanted to learn to tan hides. And so we gathered at one of our knowledge keepers, I will call her that, Wendy Lewis, who has tanned hides for years and made moccasins and beaded barrettes and all kinds of things, her and her sister Jackie. And so we went through the whole process of tanning a hide, and from that we took pictures of the whole process and pictures of each other and what have you. And from those pictures, we created a bingo game. And so we have some very competitive people who like to gamble a little bit. And so we played bingo, and that really helped us to not only learn the words, but retain them. And so it was like additional words as a part of that. And everyone engaged in that. And so everybody had fun with that. And so when you won the game, it was like, kin the whoop, and you know, I won. And then everyone's, you know, I was one away or whatever. And so, yeah, so trying to take the language that we were learning and putting it into situations or into conversations that were kind of everyday. And then I think the relationships that we've been able to kind of garner as a result of language has really shifted our perspectives on what we see as being important or valuable.
Mm. What do you win? Fluency?
Well, that and money.
Oh.
Bet a quarter a game.
Oh, you actually had to bring your quarters to the game. So tell me, how did you do?
Not very well. We had some lucky people in our class.
You lost some quarters.
Yeah,
you
lost a few. Yeah.
As a stumptima, or grandmother, and as a mom myself, I remember singing to my children. It is one of the ways we teach language. Peggy created lullabies in the Ensilchan language.
So when I started my language journey, I did it so that I could speak to my grandchildren. And at the time, I didn't have any when I started. I have a grandson right now who is 18 months, and I have a granddaughter who will arrive in July. And for me, I think when kids are little, they're sponges. And I really wanted my grandkids to know how beautiful they are. And I wanted them to hear the language. And I'm not fluent. I am on a language journey and I work at it every day, but I'm not fluent. And so the lullabies were a way of being able to give my grandchildren music. I mean, I can remember jingles from when I was a kid. You know, it's just you hear like a tune and then it just comes back to you. And I wanted my grandkids to have that. And so one of the, when I was thinking about the tunes, I really wanted it to be about you are beautiful and you're important and you're valued, and reinforcing that in the language. I think when we hear things in the language versus when you hear it in English, it means something when it's in the language. And so the lullabies were a way of being able to just make sure my grandkids get the language.
Mm. So you came up with three, and the first one is always remember your scale ways. Tell me about how you developed that one.
So all of the lullabies, I worked with a couple of people. Herman Edwards really helped me with the lyrics of what I was looking for, as well as Dr. Jeanette Armstrong. And I think with that one, it was about remember where you come from. Like your skilchaut, that's where you come from. And I don't know, I guess just a thought of mine was, if that's just like burned on your brain when you're little, like you'll never forget that. Mm-hmm. And it's there. Nobody could take that away from you. And so it's about, you know, you're beautiful. And I think all kids are beautiful, and they grow into beautiful toddlers and beautiful, you know, little kids and beautiful teens and beautiful adults if that's what they believe and that's what they're given when they're little.
Is geluk chautet chak hasta chmistiuch is geluk chaut.
So you have another one, and this one is so fun. This is the you titled it Sunny Boy Counting, and it's a counting song.
So when I started learning the language, I couldn't even count to 10. But if you think about the ABCs, like A, B, C, D, whatever, it's the counting song was about not just for kids, but for adults, because it's like when there's a jingle, you kind of remember that. And so the counting song was about being able to teach not just babies or toddlers, but adults about how to count to 10.
We ta ka king cooks hoya nax a seal catlis. We ta ka king cooks hoya moose chilks tuckums. We ta ka king cooks hoya sea spilk team. Hachanut. Weeta, ka king cooks hoyach. Oopingst, oopingst, tali hoita oopingst.
I love it, I love it. So you could replace the word weeta with sisincha, little brother, or any. Okay.
Yep.
Wow. I love it.
Mm-hmm. So again, it's like using the lullabies as everyone has babies or has grandbabies, and this just, if you're not in the language or you're not learning the language, these are really simple lullabies that anyone could learn, and you can sing those to your grandkids. And so this one was about that, like, you know, I just picture myself holding my grandbaby and being able to sing him a lullaby. So I think that is kind of for all of those lullabies, was for young moms or young or grandmas or grandpas or uncles, whoever. They're not hard language, like they're not difficult language to say. And so anyone could pick it up and they could sing it, and there you go. Now your kid's getting language every day.
Quakun quanat, sis yusa, a ama, sis yusa, a ama. Quakun quanat, quakun quanat.
your language journey?
You're never too old to start. And it truly is a journey. If you think about the English language, I'm fluent in the English language, but I absolutely don't know every single word or every single thing there is to know about the English language. And so when I truly took that into my Inkalakchun learning, it really freed myself of the pressure that I put on myself, in that I will never know it all. The difference today is that if there's something that I want to learn about, there is a resource that I can now access to learn about it in the language. And that wasn't true, you know, 20, 30 years ago. So, yeah. Learn your language. That would be my message. You will not be disappointed at all.
Hearing my wonderful friend Peggy sing in our language brought up so many feelings. I felt this exciting sense of urgency to become more fluent. It wasn't a heavy kind of guilt. Instead, it was more like a spark of hope for what was to come. I can totally picture a time when Peggy and I are sitting together as elders and our grandkids are chatting away, sharing their Inkalakchun words with us. How amazing would that be? I can't wait for these moments. One of my favorite Inkalakchun words is singing. Inkwanchin. 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 It's been wonderful sharing time with you on this episode of Words and Culture. I'm Tracy Kim Bono. Until next time, Ninuis Achacha Miku Kwakwalt.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Hausin Dan King Sam.
Maltus.
Ninuis Achacha Miku Kwakwal.
Kachu Nautano.
Wapamatin Mina.
This is Bird Note. Birds' songs and calls convey lots of messages. From "this is my territory" to "I'm looking for a mate" to "there's a predator nearby." But did you know that some bird songs contain secret messages? Like this sweet singing eastern bluebird. Bluebirds benefit from people setting up homes for them in the spring. In fact, when you reverse that song, you can hear,
"Nest boxes set up. Nest boxes."
Oh, those little scamps. Or this familiar cry of the Canada goose. If we play that backwards.
Do geese see God? Do geese see God?
Huh. I guess that one's a bit more of a thinker. And of course, the tricky blue jay. Play that in reverse, and you get
April Fools. April Fools.
Learn more about the incredible and real abilities of birds at our website, birdnote.org.
I'm Mark Graham Hill.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM broadcasting from Burnaby.